over this. The Pine City Planning Commission Public Open House dated Wednesday, October 20th. It is 6:14 p.m. We will establish a quorum beginning with myself and going clockwise. John Thomas, Planning Commissioner present.
Commissioner Linda Maggard. Commissioner Gloria Penny.
We do have a quorum of three. We will have the Pledge of Allegiance now. Mayor Key Shields, can you please bear some Pledge of Allegiance?
My pleasure.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Mayor Shields. Item number four, added agenda items. Will there be any added agenda items? We will move to agenda
Four.
Or under other matters, I'm sorry, in agenda item number six, other matters.
Okay.
We'll move any added agenda items to other matters.
Have anything?
I have none.
Okay.
All right, we will move right to the public open house introduction of draft zoning code. Deborah McMahon and James Lewis.
The first thing I'd like to do is have our public audience come up and join us, because we don't have that many. So it'd be easier.
Sounds like a good plan.
And see if we can do it easier.
You folks know your way around this table.
Yeah. The next thing I'd like to do is stay consistent with our other open houses where we talked about why we're doing this in the first place. And all of you are familiar with the fact that we're incorporated and that we have to have our own rules to guide the destiny of Lapine. Mm-hmm. The first step was to create the policies and the comp plan. The second step is to create the rules and regulations, which consist of a variety of ordinances. The zoning ordinance, the land division ordinance, which describes how you split up property into individual lots. The lighting ordinance, which talks about how you can use light within the community and focuses on preserving the dark sky. Our sign ordinance, which is pretty obvious. We manage time, place, and manner, the shape of signs. And then SDC mitigation, we've put together a draft policy framework and code that helps people understand how SDCs could be used once we get an SDC methodology created. And then the very last one, which is really the most important one, is the Land Use Procedures Ordinance, which is the guidebook that tells us how to process every kind of permit and land use action that might come before the city. The reason we're doing all this work is because the state of Oregon requires us to, and we received a grant to do this work. And there are 6 key points that we hope to accomplish throughout the process. We want to reinforce the purpose of Goal 1 and how citizen involvement is a critical component of the state and local land use program. And our first public hearing is November 17th. And so leading up to this point, we've been working with the TAC and individuals in the community, the Planning Commission, individual city councilors, as many people as we can possibly contact to get their thoughts about how they want these regulations created. Today we just talked about what the director of the Parks District wants, and we've been doing that all throughout the process. We also want to describe how the creation of the zoning helps shape the community commensurate with the community vision contained in the comp plan. It has to flow from the comp plan and end up in the zoning code so that one supports the other. We want to describe how zoning can create a format that citizens can use to anticipate what's going to happen in their community, what kinds of development projects will be happening in their community, and how they can interact with those projects and weigh in. And then, of course, everything we do, we try to engage citizens to participate in the development of the various zones and help foster a collaborative future. And we've been accomplishing that. We haven't had the greatest attendance, but sometimes those things don't occur until the first public hearing. So I'm not really worried right now. We also want to do something that's very important. When people talk about the city creating new laws and what's going to happen to their property values, etc., we want to reduce that anxiety. We want to make things as clear and transparent as possible. We're not playing any games. It's a very straightforward code. We've tried to minimize it as much as possible because we want to get to that framework. That's just a checklist. You come in for your land use permit, you've done X, X, and X, it's checked off, you get your permit. And there's a good reason for that. Lapine's not going to have a lot of money to hire a bunch of staff. So if we can have something that's easy to enforce, we're not going to have problems on the back end. And that's been a theme that's run through this entire process. And then we want to illustrate how development regulations will be implemented and how we can achieve a consensus in the community on how the processes should work, on how the outcomes should work, and what public notices should contain, and how we would amend any of the portions of the zoning ordinance. So in the procedures ordinance, James has crafted places where you can amend things, you can change the process. None of what we're doing today is written in stone. It's just a starting point. Right. And with that, I'll open it up for any questions.
No, that seems kind of silly. Have you and Barbara had a chance to look, or have you looked at any of the stuff? I mean,
I actually have not. I couldn't my copy of it.
And, you know, that's a good point, Gloria. We should bring up that this is the point where James and I are going to take all the comments that have been received and craft major revisions. You know, we've been doing that all along, but the document that will be before the public on the 17th will look different than what we started out with, and that's just normal.
Will the public's be able to see that document prior to that meeting on the 17th?
I hope so.
Yep.
Yeah, I hope so.
And will they do that, can they do that via email? I mean, the computer, website. How will they...
Every one of these is it's broken down.
Well, forwarded to Patty.
That's a lot of meetings.
To put on the city website.
That entire...
Yeah, it's all on the website.
So what we would ask is, what happens is the revisions that we would take, whatever's on there now, gets pulled off.
Yeah, we'll just replace it.
And you have, here's the new. Okay. So they are able to look at, you know, people don't have a computer, I mean, there'll be hard copies they can come and look at.
Okay, so somebody comes up and says, John, where do I get, how can I see the new zoning code?
Website.
City webpage?
City webpage.
City Hall.
Right, yeah, it's all dead on the internet.
Yeah. I know, this is all zoning codes and ordinances broken down into different, you know, like the sign codes and the lighting.
There's a link to it on the front page of the website. Okay, and this has all been done at your meetings that you've been
doing. Yeah, we've been working on
different sections. So what's the link, Patty? They go to city,
CI, and then it's period, LA, hyphen, PINE, period, and then OR.US.
I went online and I started looking at the SDC mitigation thing because I'm really interested in that.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
I don't have time to read a book right now.
And so they get on there, and what's the link after they get on the city of the
front? They'll put something right on the front page, link
to
the ordinances. It has an announcement about the meeting, too, on the 17th.
Okay. Well, there's three of them. The zoning, the draft zoning codes, the SDC mitigation.
Six.
Yeah. Something else.
Zoning, subdivision, lighting, signage, mitigation, and procedures.
Oh, okay. Well, it's been a while since I looked. I saw like three of them.
There's just three of them, but in that one, the big one.
Is it condensed?
Yeah.
We've condensed a few more.
Okay.
Can we dispel a lot of fears by having a simple statement prior to, you know, to the hearing, to them getting on the computer or something, a simple statement that refers to how this grandfathering is going to happen in that first year or two, something, you know, and
I think that's going to be a big one. I do.
Well, my language. It, you know, I don't want to shock you, but I want to grab them write it first, and I want to settle them down before they get too excited.
Okay.
I want to grab them and say, you know what, before you get excited, just settle down. Here's what's, you know, here you're not going to be required to do anything. This will take a while to work in. A type of a grandfathering type clause.
That's key when you get to a public hearing on zoning code stuff. I agree with you, because the notice that goes out to them, the individual mailed notice, because of state law, has to contain a statement that says that these provisions may affect your property value.
Right.
Well, it doesn't say that it may affect your property value by improving or increasing your property value, but everyone immediately thinks
exactly
what you're thinking that they're going to
think. But the good thing about it is that people will come to find out. Hopefully.
That's how you get that.
Right. Something to let them know that, you know, this is going to take, you know, these things they're coming in, but it's going to take a while. You know, because I know what I've heard is that what's going to happen is all of a sudden there's going to be armies of code enforcement officers storming this town, and things are going to change. You know,
and you've heard this from people? People are really concerned about this? You've heard these comments?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, my.
Some people are going to feel bad, and other people are going to anticipate it.
We're going to have all these zoning codes, and, you know, the end is coming, and all
On that note, and as the consultants, I think, you know, it's a key point, but I'm just going to be very blunt, is that what we will do is we will address, I believe, the issues with regard to how does this provision affect your property in terms of what you can or can't do on your property. Does it have a reversionary clause? Is it grandfathered? Mm-hmm. With regard to the enforcement or the code enforcement thereof, and some people anticipate it, some people, you know, want it, some people don't. That is something where we've all had that discussion, but it's going to be, once these are adopted down the road, city administration of that, as well as city administration, we'll try to lay that out for you. Yeah. But our answer is going to have to be to people that we don't know how that is going to work in the future.
Right, that's going to have to be council.
It's the transition.
Is that statement, is that exact statement have to go on a notification, or can you say could possibly increase or decrease the value?
It just has to say that it will affect your property.
Will affect.
Could potentially affect your value. We should use the same one we used for the comp plan process, so we're consistent. And that format's pretty much, you know, it's even on the DLCD website, so it's pretty standardized.
And the reason why I make that statement that I just did is that is because a topic like that can tend to take over the meeting where what you're really wanting is comments on the meet. You know, is that setback too big or too small, as opposed to who's going to come out and enforce it, regardless of what it is.
Well, and that is an opportunity for them, and that's what, you know, they need to realize that this is their opportunity to give us feedback and to make the written statements or whatever. There's still a period of time in there.
Absolutely. So, and we want to continually remind people that there was a public process that created the policies that drive these concepts. Mm-hmm. We're not just pulling it out of thin air. It's something that the public said they were concerned about before. Lighting. I don't want my neighbor's light to glare on my property. Mm-hmm. Or setbacks. Or how many horses can keep on an acre. The kinds of things we heard through the comp plan process show up through this process.
Yeah. You know, come and help help us, help ourselves, something, you know, develop what the future of the pine will look like. I mean, you know, because I want to get away from this us against them, you know, attitude to where, you know, I mean, there's people in this country right now, and it's kind of a bad time, they're talking about, you know, whether the new Tea Party will expand into, you know, a revolution. And I mean, you know, there's historical talk going around, and most of it's all negative. That's the ones you hear the loudest. And so, you know, I want to get away from that us against, you know, the government against us type thing, and just
okay.
really say that this is your process, which it is.
Mm-hmm.
But instead of always, you know, saying, you know, this is something we're doing and you're going to have to suck it up, that type of attitude, I just want to get away from that.
Okay.
And a lot of that can just be done in just invitations and statements and such.
Well, I think another thing it might be important to make a point at the open house is that we did not do cookie cutter. I mean, we took
exactly.
we took a lot of them from different places, but we have looked at each individual one and you know, critiqued it or whatever you want to say to make it fit.
Stylized it just for
right.
time.
Mm-hmm. So I think that's important for people to know that's the way we see it. Okay. But now they have a different perception, possibly.
Since I haven't been coming to meetings and don't know what the process was, I can probably come up with some of the questions that you might get at a public meeting. Like, what did you start with?
Look at the City of Lapine zoning ordinance.
Yeah, where did you start with it? Yeah.
What was the beginning of that? Was there a template? Was there?
Yeah, the comp plan sets out the various zones that are in your city now. Your existing zoning through Deschutes County sets out the different residential, commercial, and industrial zones. And so
there's a lot of state requirements
yeah.
that we have to meet.
And then the things we heard in the
comp plan. So start with that framework.
Yeah.
Okay.
Recognize the zones. And then look at the uses. What, you know, if we created a residential zone that didn't allow duplexes, boy, that'd be a problem. So there's some common sense stuff.
Yeah. Or we were talking campgrounds. I mean, campgrounds, mm-hmm. a lot of communities you go to, when you look at the residential zone, they don't allow campgrounds. That's something, though, specifically in the line that we heard that we wanted. You know, that the community wanted that, like, within design development
reasons,
how do you yeah. mitigate that? But those are the types of things that, you know, I mean, obviously there's shell language, you know, there's stuff that you know, sat down in sections that I typed, Deborah typed, that I know that worked from other communities.
Mm-hmm.
So you can pull pieces that work, and there's an old saying, I'll just throw this out there at you, that in the beginning there was one zoning code, and that every community in the world kind of manipulated that to what they want for their community, and it's pretty much true. But what you will find, and I think people may be, like, two things out there. One, in relation to some of what you said, it's not as if there's no land use regulations on their property today. They have regulations in place.
Right.
The second thing is, this is a lot closer to what we heard them telling us during the comp plan process than what's in place, what is in place
yeah.
today.
Yeah. I can give you an example on the lighting code. we searched around to find something that was closest to what we heard expressed in the comp plan process. And there are some strong opinions. Mm-hmm. Pima County, Arizona. Very strong, protect the night sky ordinance.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the shell for what we have. You know, and somebody asked, well, how much is a lumen meter? Can we enforce this? Patty did some research, like, you know, $500-$600. That's doable.
Yeah.
So if somebody says, hey, my neighbor has a
yeah.
giant light and it exceeds the code, how would we know?
How do you know? You have to gauge.
You use your lumen meter.
Lumen meter.
And you get to have a light, you just can't have the sun
yeah.
out there.
You just can't have it blazing right. away.
So you took from what you heard at the comp plan
mm-hmm.
process
mm-hmm.
and put that together with what you, from your experience,
yes.
know that people who want this sort of thing also typically want that sort of thing and kind of built on that.
And Oregon's land use is fairly unique in terms of procedure. There's some things in state law that we just simply have to follow.
Right.
So that does drive some of the procedures and subdivision codes and things like that.
I think we also were real careful about allowing, not being so rigid that, you know, this is, it has to be this way, you know. We did allow, especially some things about, you know, being able to appeal and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and then
process.
Other things you were pretty conservative on, giving people who have horses 6 months to rectify.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was, you know, a comment that this is a serious issue, and for those that are really overloading the land, you know, they've got 6 months to get it taken care of.
On the other end, though, there were you talked about, you know, the grand things that are grandfathered is very important. Things like, such as lighting, such as signs.
Sidewalks.
You know, there some communities have reversionary clauses where you have 3 years to make your sign conform to this new sign standard with a cost of thousands of dollars. You were very respectful that, you know, as businesses change or as, you know, a longer period of time.
Yeah, a lot of this happens on new developments. Just a common sense way to look at it. You're not going to just change overnight. There has to be a time limit to work with people's finances and all that. There was talk about grants instead of just a city sitting back going, you need to do this and it's going to cost you X amount of dollars. It's helping them. Going to them and say, you know, here's what you need to do, but here's some help. These are grants, block grants that can affect the whole city. These types of things. The city actually helping people, not just telling them what to do, but actually help them achieve that mm-hmm. goal and working with them. And they come into the planning director rather than him looking at their 10 copies and saying, no, you know, go back and do it again. It's actually sitting down. Right now we don't have that much going on. So this is a perfect time, the next couple of years, to have this little part-time planning director and have that person sit down and help the person establish, you know, say, well, no, you need, you know, a copy of this. You need a plat map of this. Show them other copies of, well, here's one successful application. Here's what they look like. That type of thing. Really help them, not just
send
them back out the door.
Now, that would be a policy.
And that was a recommendation from the Planning Commission
that
we
talked
about.
Just a helpful policy.
Mm-hmm. Of these codes must come with a certain philosophy.
Right.
And you'll see that come from the Planning Commission. And it was one of your directives is that we create that policy to recommend to the council.
But we've tried to implement, for example, the procedures ordinance, which is the rules of how you play the land use game.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We've tried to, on the application requirements, the review requirements, we try to minimize those as much as possible so that you get what you need to do an adequate review, but you're not overkill. You're making it easy for people. There was a Oregon land use law was first adopted. It was set up, and there's language, you can do historic language that was set up so that the average person can go in and make their application and develop their property. Well, I've never, you know, you have a hearing coming up before you that has how many attorneys involved.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But we try to avoid making somebody get an architect to build a doghouse.
Right.
And
that's how I envision our city being. That's how I've always envisioned it.
Yeah.
People heard me say it over and over, make our regulations and our fee structures and such so that they're not prohibitive to the ordinary person or the businesses.
And this is the wrong time in our economy to be heavy.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not going to see things that maybe in a time of greater prosperity would require more development standards at a higher level. I'm not going to see that here. But it's going to be good for La Pine. It's just not going to be heavy duty.
Yeah, we did talk about having a short and condensed version too, but if somebody came in and, you know, oh, it's like a place I might want to start a business or I might want to live here or mm-hmm. something, they could come in and get something, you know, these are the things you need to do. And it would just be in a short form type thing that they could, you know, read easily.
Yeah.
You know, so they know what's involved.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, you know, you hear the expression, you know, let's not reinvent the wheel.
Right.
A lot of times what people say is that, you know, we take a section in Arizona land use code that applies to one section or whatever, and we say, well, we want to adopt that. If it works well in other communities, that's the first step to adopting that to La Pine. However, you can make the wheel better. And so when we say, well, we don't want to reinvent the wheel, so what we'll do is we'll take, you know, a compilation of Arizona and every other state and put in here the things that work very well. That's great. But that now what we've been working on is tweaking even what's worked well in other communities and actually tweaking that to making what's unique to La Pine. And
yes.
so,
mm-hmm.
even though we've expanded some you know, comprehensive plan talks about more open space, expanding bigger lots instead of little tiny lots, instead parking spaces we've expanded. These are type, we're listening to the comprehensive plan and trying to, you know, make this really a workable, nice quality of life area and not just like other cities that even work well. There's nothing wrong with taking a city that things work well, but, you know, it's in a different geographic zone and such. So even though it works well there, well, it might not work well there because we got soil 3 or 4 months out of the year. So
exactly. There was a lot of discussion about the unique features of the pine, including that you have snow on the ground for a long period of time and drainage issues.
Right. So, for example, Madras, where you may want, where they want curbs and sidewalks all tight on the street, that may work because you're not clearing snow every day.
We will give them out of this. We make a zoning ordinance and says everybody's got to put curbs in now and rain gutters and such. We'll be laughed out of this town because what will happen is the next winter, all those curbs and all those rain gutters will go away because it just doesn't work for the pine. So we, you know, it's neat to take, and I think that's what we've ended up with. We're still working on it. There's still a little bit of work. But really, we're working on something that's very simplified. You know, every other town is going to be, the zoning ordinance is going to be twice, if not 3 or 4 times thicker than this. I mean, this is actually pretty minimal.
A lot of it's definitions.
It is. The first you know, 30, no.
This section's added to this, though. But
the first 20 pages are definitions. So, I mean, it's...
I'm glad to, I like all those comments that, you know, the approach and everything. When we first incorporated, Luana and Stu and I had this thing that we always said that we're going to be the little city that could.
Yeah.
And by that we meant that we were going to be a friendly city.
Mm-hmm.
The city that could work to give people the protections that they need and the right amount of latitude that makes them feel comfortable. Mm-hmm. And they, and to be approachable so that when they come to their city with a need, they're going to get help. They're not going to get orders and, oh, by the way, pay me this much. And it looks like that's where our planning commission is.
We all feel the same way.
Yeah, so we do.
We've talked about that a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But, have you seen any concerns or anything that you have that you want to address, or Barbara?
No concerns. I just talked with James about this a little bit out in the hall, but one thing that I have envisioned and hope that we might be able to, if other people want it, work into our city somewhere, if people think it's doable, is pedestrian shopping zones or zone or area. Pedestrian mall. James gave me some of the pros and cons on that, and you know, I've seen a lot of them in Europe. Well, it's just kind of the way all over in Europe in a lot of places. Mm-hmm. But then we talked about the reasons why it probably works there and why it may or may not work in different areas here.
I just throw out there on that note is what we do is we don't specifically, I mean, if you wanted, we could call out an area on the map that says here's where it's going to be. But I think what we do is in the code is it becomes something that's permissible to happen.
Exactly.
With certain design guidelines. Right. And so it could happen in a couple different areas if somebody decides that they want
to develop. An allowable use, and not the only use. By God, you can't develop here unless this is what you do.
Yeah.
You know?
And what you're talking about is kind of a mixed-use concept, and we have lots of places on the map where that is more of a pronounced feature of the zoning. It's in addition, like, many of the zones allow mixed use, but the transition areas, the hatch marks areas on the map, lend themselves to more of a mixed use feel.
Okay, and so by default, then pedestrian shopping mall pedestrian mall would fit into that
because you have many uses that can be accessed by walking.
Okay,
and that's that's a good thing.
Exactly, to be open to private and public, you know, interests and private business, you know, we don't want to tell them, you know, we're not telling them how the city's going to look like, but we want to be wide open to, you know, to their ideas. And so a lot of this zone is up to the city at the time. When that developer comes to this city, he's going to have a lot of latitude. He or she's going to have a lot of latitude within this zone to say, hey, I don't know if you guys thought about this, but, you know, my mall or whatever would be awesome right here. And then now to go to work with that developer and make it happen, rather than to say, you know, you can't do this here and you're supposed to do this all here. I mean, we want, that's why we left it kind of open. With, you know, simpler, to me, simpler is better in zoning codes, because what that does is that allows time to progress so that that planning department at that time, 5 years from now, can make that happen without changing the whole zoning ordinance. You know, and if you go through here and if you make this too thick, what's going to happen is you're going to handcuff yourself to any future development. And developers are going to come into this town and they're going to see this thing that's 3 inches thick and they're going to go, well, how about Madras? You know, I think Lapine is too much into themselves right here, and you know, they're
you bring up a good point. There's some trends that we have bucked. And as planners, we have enough experience to say that some of these trends aren't good.
Yep.
Protecting the night sky is a good trend. But consolidating the ordinances into one giant book, mm-hmm. we feel, and I know James agrees with me, is that that's cumbersome.
Yeah.
People want to pick up the sign code, give them the sign code.
Right.
Don't make them buy a 500-page document.
Yeah. And then
right?
Weave through Section 3, referring you to Section 8, and back to
that
Section 6.
Yeah.
I think there's enough of that.
Next thing you're going to go, I'm going to have to rebuild my whole commercial piece of property in order to change my sign, so forget it, you know.
But this is a trend we see in mm-hmm. urban planning a lot, is, oh, we want the unified code, everything has to be in one document.
Mm-hmm.
It's not helpful.
It's helpful for the planners, it's not helpful for the public.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And that's what we're here to serve.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, there's a lot of us that we like a certain amount of control and everything, but, you know, the term control freak is not a place for the Planning Commission to be in, because what's going to happen is there's going to be a few of us sitting around the table saying, this is what we want Lapine to look like. We mentioned before about how there's been people out there come up to us and say, well, we want Lapine to, you know, to look like Sisters. Well, you know, the public doesn't want that's a few people with a loud voice, but you know, we want Lapine to look like
Lapine.
We don't want to move Sisters into here. I mean, we all, if we want a dose of Sisters, we can drive an hour and be there. But Lapine is, there's been a lot of talk tonight about how Lapine should look like Lapine, and that would be unique to any other town in America.
And what communities do in that regard is, I mean, you're a brand new community, you need to get your codes in place. Once you get these in place, then, you know, maybe on the work plan for the year is, for example, we were talking about the open space.
Yeah.
Yes. That becomes a work project for the year. Design issues, okay? What we're here starting to hear from people that we have various design ideas that people want to see their commercial areas developed under.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then you do this, you know, planning process where that's, you focus
right.
on that issue. And once you come up with that stuff, then you amend your codes to add that stuff in there.
Mm-hmm.
And so way back when we talked about the comp plan, we started hearing, you know, one of the big issues, we said, you know, these design issues
yep.
for commercial and potentially even some
yep.
multifamily residential areas, if you get into that now, it's going to bog down your process.
Right. Yeah, bigger visions at first. Because like you said, the smaller stuff, you know, when we have a little planning department and all that, and that first guy comes in and wants to build his little two-car garage over here, and it's within setbacks and all that stuff, we should take his $300 or $500, whatever, like that, stamp approval on here and send him out before we spend too much time on it. Mm-hmm. And say, you know what, go. And I mean, the next day he's hammering nails and this little two-car garage is gone. Because it's within the setbacks, we've looked at his whole plan, it's all good.
Meets the minimum.
Boom, I mean, go. And not get bogged down with, oh, well, that's Mr. Smith over there. If he builds a garage, and get that small town politics is no place for a planning commission. You know, everybody's equal. It's like, you know what, you want to build a little garage and spend the setbacks and everything. I don't know your name an hour after you left here. Boom, it's done. You know what I mean?
Just process.
Yeah, just process it and go.
Yep, I agree.
Just
everyone agrees.
Given that latitude, that's what I see. Where we could really go wrong is if we start to try to control too much of this development in Lapine.
And it'll come at you in the future anyway.
You'll have
good reasons to look at what they call the urban forest and broaden your species and require different species because it's healthier for the community. All that stuff will come later, but not right now.
That's why this BioGreen thing, I think, is awesome at first in Lapine. Because, see, that's going to break a lot of this ice and a lot of this anxiety and stuff. You know, getting a project like that going through. And after that, when the guy wants to build a T-car garage, I don't think we're going to do too much about it. You know what I mean? Because it'll... But if you started it out, I'm kind of glad for BioGreen because that's really kind of... helping us along.
So that's it in a nutshell. We think it's wise that do an opening statement, talk about some of the key issues like grandfathering and code enforcement and transition and how these are not reinventing the wheel, but they're customized. And if we said that in a brief opening statement,
we'll go into a little more detail, I think, on the sign code. I just think individually we go through the six ordinances and we give a few minutes on each one that says here's what this does highlighted.
Yeah.
But we can't do it like we did it with all of you. I mean, you just can't do it.
No.
And they ask for feedback,
have the materials available and they read it.
You know why that's a good idea? Because there'll be someone that'll sit back and they'll hear that under this new code a year or two from now that this sign has to be under 32 square feet or 4 by 8 inch plywood. Okay, tomorrow he'll be down at Ace Hardware and he'll be building this sign that is too, you know, people, they really want to be honest. They really do, you know. And what he'll, but they don't want to necessarily pay the fee for this new sign. So they'll be down and they'll be building their sign, you see, that will comply with this new. And so by giving them some highlights, that may help us along.
Well, so
the grandfathering clause.
You get the converses, if I'm reading it, is that I'm thinking like every time that you did like a substantial code amendment to, like if you were affecting setbacks, affecting heights, height limits, for example, in downtown Bend were reduced. They go through the hearing process, they get adopted, they go into effect, and there's a timeline. Well, what happens is, and this is a bad example, but when you're going to make something more restrictive, I've never seen laws that become less restrictive, except for right here, what we're doing.
Exactly.
As people will come in, and you'll get this flood of applications.
Exactly.
Yeah. Before the new code. And those are the things typically that are contentious, but that, you know, you have good reason for doing it. Why are you doing that? And it affects a few, but the public says
each year the Deschutes County fees always went up in July 1st. And I was right there in the line on June 30th, and I always thought, you know, because it just makes sense. I mean, you're going to save a buck.
I always took that day off.
Most controversial are the sign codes and what else? Land procedures?
Yeah, probably zoning. Probably zoning and the sign code. I don't think procedures is going to generate a lot of steam. The county has procedures now.
Sometimes the subdivision codes do, and the thing in the subdivision code that does is minimum lot size and development standards like street widths, things like we were talking about. Some people want smaller lots and greater density. Some people say we want big lots. Well, we hear from Pines people generally want bigger lots and wider streets. I'll tell you where the pushback is going to be on this, and you know, and I'm just telling you right now to expect it, is from DLCD.
Right.
Potentially developers. There's a fine, you have to think about that too, is if developers get, you know, it's that economy of scale. You
right.
More for a lesser price when you go to Costco kind of thing.
Right.
they have more lots for the same development cost, they make more money. So,
and we will, and we do have areas where they can do small lots.
It's just
what I heard is that if we have, you know, the latitude to work with, we prefer the larger lots, you know, but we also have to be, you know, that common sense and say, you know, you start out that core downtown area, and any downtown in this country has the smaller lots with the fourplexes and eightplexes, and you have to have those areas, you know, with the multifamily.
But I have to tell you, in the findings that we write, in the support document that DLCD will read, the last thing we'll put in there is that Lapine wants larger lots.
Right.
We're going to craft that to say Lapine wants a range of lot choices.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Because if we say you want larger lots, then we'll just
going to restrict it.
But if you want places where you can get bigger than what you see in a lot of community lots, there's going to be other places where you really got to crank up the density.
Right, right.
Yeah. And I think that's understandable. That should be expected.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, there's some politics there.
You know, there's other weird ways to think about it from, I think, a city council perspective is if you're thinking public infrastructure, if you have real large lots and you're servicing all, you know,
We heard that.
Return from those water sewer systems every month. Mm-hmm. They're making money for you. Okay, well, the more lots, the more connections you have, the more water usage you have, the more money you make if you're doing it right.
Right.
And you're getting more money per millennial foot of facility. Not just you're a money making business here, that's what you're
doing. Well, no, it's interesting because in the very beginning when Lapine was incorporated, we had quite a few people come in and tell us that, and there was a lot of pushback on it. You know?
Yeah.
There was a lot of pushback.
That's not going to happen for a lot of years anyway with getting money off of our water and sewer districts because of their financing for rural utility services. And I don't like the idea anyway of having those fees support the city coffers.
Well, they shouldn't, but they, if not supporting the city coffers, but supporting the ability to maintain the system.
Well, that's
the system.
Well, that's a given that that's already going on, you know.
You want to be careful with the stylistic choice that just costs the city too much and the city would subsidize it too much. I'll give you an example in Prineville. Big wide streets, they've loved them for years. Oil's gone up, they have no money for maintenance, and the streets are falling apart.
Right.
They're nice and big, but they're horrible.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to only bite off what you can
really eat. But on a, you know, along with that, because of our snow situation, we need room to maneuver in the streets.
Right. Not excessive,
right.
But customized for what you need.
Right. Yeah, somewhere halfway between.
Yeah.
Or you just add the curbs and you leave room on the side to push the snow off so your street's clear. And then when you have to overlay those in 15 years, 20 years, you're doing 32 feet of pavement rather than...
Four plexes down the middle of some of those roads in Prineville, they're that wide.
They're wider than the highway.
They are. And so you get
the plenty for trucks coming.
It is, you know, and no one ever
comes.
There's not very much traffic, and you have a big heat. So yeah, that's the takeaway, but...
Well, we don't want to make those kind of mistakes.
But when it's snow, you know, we're crossing the pine, we go to Bend on those snowy days. I watch weather, but I won't go to Bend on certain days because it just, Bend is ridiculous. I mean, here it is in Central Oregon, big, wide open Central Oregon, and you go to Bend and it's, you can't maneuver around. So that, you know, there's a trade-off somewhere halfway between would be nice.
What, over the years, what typically happens in an area like the Kegel subdivision, where what you have is what average 1 acre lot sizes, and of course they're all individually owned; they're not owned by a developer. What over the years?
You'll get partitions. Things will split in half.
Yep.
If somebody owns a series of lots, you might want your code to change to say, hey, I'd like to see a shadow plat to see how this connects up with future roads and things like that. You don't have a lot of connectivity in Kegel right now.
Mm-hmm.
So the next thing that would be important up there is to kind of master plan where the next street connections should go. And you can't get to that till you get your TSP going.
Right.
You know, another on that issue though is that I'm thinking like scenarios in Bend where we dealt with this years ago is when water and sewer became available to certain subdivisions that were half acre, because that was the minimum size you could get to have a septic system, that all of a sudden people were asking, can I divide this half acre in? Because the minimum lot size is 6,000 square feet. Mm-hmm. And there was a point at which people started to do it, but then what happened was is it started to change the character of the neighborhood for those people that lived there a long time that had no desire to do that. All of a sudden they have all these new neighbors and new development, so it can be a good thing, it can be a bad thing. So some of that's like a potential battle. It's people, some people are going to see it as a boon. I'm going to make money, I'm going to divide my property, and other people are going to not like it.
Mm-hmm. And it can be a real estate zone.
Yeah, it's just...
Well, you let development take care of itself. For instance, like up on Burgess, and you know, the one-acre lots that just face Burgess, those people that have bought and are more likely bought into there when there's busy traffic anyway and all that. Mm-hmm. And so those lots are the ones that you begin to subdivide, is those ones that are near those, and let it spread north from there, but not, you know, go way north and come back. And so just kind of let that development happen, because it's hard to go in like Jane and just blank and take. If we were going and say, okay, now all of Cagle, you can subdivide into everybody in there now. You can go, you can split all your acres into thirds, and everybody, you know, and just the whole Cagle. Well, one guy will do it way up in the northeast corner, and it'll look just funky, and then other people won't. So you shouldn't blanket anything. You know, I'm a strong opponent of just blanketing anything.
You're going to see change come when utilities are extended.
Yep. Right.
When water and sewer get extended, they have to go in easements.
Yep.
A lot of times you're not going to get your connection to sewer unless you grant a public access easement where the sewer line goes.
Yep.
And then you start building your street system, because it's a logical byproduct of where the sewer and water goes.
So we are planning, they're working on annexation.
Yep. And you know, listen to the homeowner association. You know, encourage a homeowner association in Cagle subdivision. Okay, and so now you're getting water and sewer up these roads. Well, now encourage this homeowner association. So now the president of the homeowner association comes to the city and says, well, now we want all of Cagle to be able to divide into third acres, and here's the vote, and everybody says, yay. Well, then we're more likely going to go, well, okay then, let's go for it. But just as a city, to say, a little planning commission to say, well, I think all of Cagle needs to be subdivided. See, that's where you're going to go wrong. You've got to listen to the people.
I would play devil's advocate with you, though, see, because what you will have is you will have, regardless of what we say and what you say, you will have a state agency, DLCD, saying, once you send water and sewer to those areas,
then you need to densify. Well, that's...
I don't care about the character of the
state. What the state wants, you know, because we have a state that is large government, and we do have to do work within the state parameters.
You'll get grants and you'll get subsidies to do some master planning out there, and people can be part of that process, and it will help them. And then as the economy changes, people will want to look for creative ways to make money. Just going to happen.
But you know, Jay is right. As a dreamer, though, I go over these big dreams, and then I basically go to the state and say, well, why can't I do it? You know, and the state always tells me why. So we do have a very controlling state, and that's just...
But if you always... When you hear opposing viewpoints, and I don't know, I'm just a believer, and this is my philosophy, I'm not trying to tell you how to conduct your hearing, but when everyone's a little bit angry, you pretty much got it right at that point, is what I... Once you start implementing the code, you never hear anything from anybody. So, like, if you say, okay, I have these one-acre lot, and minimum slots like 6,000 square feet, gee, I could get six lots out of that. Practically, you just say, everyone, we'll densify it, but you're not allowed to divide it more than one time to make one extra lot. Mm-hmm. Or you can get density by saying, now what we allow is we allow a secondary unit, like above the garage or something like that, that people can rent out and make money. Mm-hmm. But the character of the neighborhood looks still like a house with a detached garage and has an apartment above it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, the other thing on that too, though, I mean, I think you kind of touched on it, when you would start dividing, there's things like roads and other things that you have to consider.
Yeah.
So, if somebody wanted to divide, they would have to show how they were going to be able to do that, right?
Sure. Frontage on a road.
Yeah, think of different owners. Now, instead of one owner per acre, and you divide it in thirds, now you have three owners you're dealing with.
Yeah, but they all have to be able to get to the property.
But they're all three taxpayers within the city limits. So there's a lot of trade.
Well, but the biggest issue there is all of a sudden, how many lots are in that neighborhood?
Maybe
200. 200? So we'll say 200. Let's say you divided them into three. You have 600. That creates 4,000 more daily trips going in and out of that neighborhood. Because it's 10 per house. So what you're able to do is when you're able to say, okay, well, it really overburdens the streets, the intersections with Burgess, and so we need to come back to something reasonable.
That's where freedom, you know, Linda mentioned something, that's where being an American and being free kicks in is when the city does all this to you, you do have one option. You can leave.
You can sell.
Yeah. You know what? I've had old timers come to me and go, you know, I hate what's happened to Lapine. What have you got, you know, I just want to move out here. What have you got? And I always offer myself, well, Christmas Valley is one of those. And you go, well, I hate Christmas Valley because there's no trees on it. And I go, well, settle in because it's going to be a long winter. I mean, well, there's no place left.
And realize that Lapine's growth over the next 20 years is just under 1,000 people. We're not talking.
That's projected.
Right. Yeah, that could change.
Could easily change. But for now, that's what we shoot
like
for.
That.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
You know, with the freedom comes the responsibility, too. To, you know, you know, that's my philosophy, is that, you know, you want to be able to do what you want. But what if your neighbor did what they wanted and you didn't like it? You'd be the first one to complain, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and sometimes people live peacefully, and, you know, other times they feud.
I have a question. There are property owners who have homes that they rent out and they live out of state or out of the area. Yeah. How are you going to reach them and let them know about the
notifications and stuff?
Yeah. Because they're responsible for the property that the renters are on.
The Measure 56 notice goes to the property owner.
Whoever's the property owner, that goes to them. So,
But they don't communicate with their renters. You know, like I received a notice that you can only have 10 dogs.
What happens is under the county records, there's a property owner, and that property owner is it's wherever they list their residence is where the notification goes. Mm-hmm. So it's really up to the individual resident to list their correct, you know, mailing address. If they put a bogus address on there, or their renter's address that's right here in Lapine, that's who's going to get the notice. It's whoever the tax assessor has is the...
Assumption is if you get the tax bill and you pay the tax bill, that you're going to get that notice. And ultimately it plays down into, like, even if you have a renter that's doing something illegal on the property, like code enforcement wise, that renter is not the one that's in trouble. It's the property owner that is faced with any enforcement or citation. So everything always goes to the property owner.
But there's public notice on radio and in the Eagle and a variety of other places where renters can see what's happening in their community too.
But if I stack garbage around my house and people didn't like it, and I don't realize that that's not really legal because, you know, I've always done it.
Sure.
Then I'm not responsible. It's my landlord.
No, I don't know. I've seen this actual situation, but they do go after the property owner, and it's up to them to enforce that. So if you don't do it, usually they'll have somebody, you know, to protect themselves, they'll have somebody come in and charge you, you know.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's a legal responsibility for them.
It's the renter, property owner. It gets put into their court. Somebody needs to comply, and you guys figure it out. It's the same like when you have homeowners associations with CC&Rs. People always would come in and say, well, you know, we have CC&Rs in our neighborhood, and what are you going to do about it? And we say, well, those are not under the jurisdiction of the city. That is between the homeowners association and that property owner, and however you enforce it.
Yeah.
Now, you know, the code enforcement officer, whenever we get this person that goes around and they're looking for, that person, if we have in our policy that our code enforcement officer, has this protocol, one of the protocols may be that the first contact might be just a friendly knock on the door, hey, he blew all his garbage and stuff, because that's what the county or city code said. And if you don't, I like code enforcement officers that always go, they will come after you. Like, they're not part of the day,
You must have had a lot of experience with
that. They always go, but if you don't, I'm a good guy, but they will come after you. And they'll start firing you and all this and that, And so, it's something. Just a little warning there, what kind of noise. Well, 6 months later, you come along and you go, you've changed it, your voice changed a little bit. You say, well, I was over here 6 months ago and getting cleaned up and stuff, and I'm going to have to, put this address down but what the heck, I'm going to give you another 30 days right here. And that person just got this special little gift of 30 days. Now, it's probably written in our policy that you give them, on second notice, you give them 30 days, but see, they just got this free little 30-day gift, because they don't read the so they got this free little gift, well, after 30 days, then you come back and you go, here's this letter that, Cash Dang, you had to print out. And here's this letter, and it says, you've got X amount of time to clean it up before the fines begin.
Release the hounds.
And then 30, 60 days, 90 days, 180 days, whatever, then here's the fine. And then after about two or three of those, they have a summons to go to court. That's just the way it is. But a lot of it's attitude. I mean, what I see, a lot of it's just the attitude. If you get away from this us against them type attitude, government against the people and all that, and get back to of the people for the people and just talk to them, a lot of it's just attitude. You can get people to do stuff. If you just
it's education,
treat
like
a,
too.
Sure.
Yeah.
Just treat them like a
whole
bunch
of education.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. How do you treat things when someone misunderstands the codes and thinks he's doing the right thing? We have today one of my customers down in Klamath County called because he was replacing his own drain field for a septic system. Got all the specs and everything from the county, put in his 375-foot drain field lines, had the county inspector come out, and she says, well, this one line is too close to the property line. And he has this is his property and his system, and his lines come out here. He has 1, 2, 3 lines. Well, his line on the south side of the property is too close to the property line. He says, that it was supposed to be
10 feet or 15
feet. No, it's not even that. It's whatever it is. So and so far away from the edge of the property line, and that's what it is. And she said, he thought it was from center to the property line. It's from the edge of that drain line.
So we're talking about a couple
inches. Maybe 6 inches.
Oh, and what you do? And you move the string where the property line is.
Actually, it's a legitimate mistake. The guy thought, measure from...
Because everything hasn't covered up yet, right?
Because everything else says from center. This line is supposed to
there
be so
go.
Far from center
everything
to this line and so on.
Exactly.
And so he just made that same assumption for that. And Klamath
County,
she wasn't going to budge. She told him, she says, you need to go talk to somebody, a professional who does this kind of stuff, and get some ideas from them on what else to do.
Wording in?
And she made it very clear.
Take that one out and put it on the other side.
And I asked him about that, and he said, that's where my driveway is, and there's no way to move the driveway. Anyway, my brother went out there and looked at it to see if maybe he could come up with something else for him.
That's a tough one.
It's tough, but it's very I hate stuff like that because what it is they're using the code or the law to hit you over the head with, as opposed to helping. Their job is to help you through it. Right. Their job is an inspector, but their job is to help you through the rules.
The burden is with the county then.
And that's kind of my question. So as the agency, which the city is going to be, just temporarily.
Or what you do is there are solutions. You can get a septic easement on the neighbor's property.
Oh, yeah. If you have a nice neighbor,
or you do a quick little 2-inch lot line adjustment, it costs you money because you're surveying things. But I mean, all these solutions cost you money. Or,
but is it unheard of for the agency to just turn the other way and say,
"Well, you have to always have as your guiding principle, am I protecting the public health and safety?
Exactly.
And I'm the guardian for everyone." So if you can make a decision that this is not a threat to public health and safety, what's 3 inches?
Yeah. 6-inch line, 4-inch line.
The diameter of a pond.
You know, there's area practice established. He said everything else was to center. And
corner.
And we have an engineer in the planning commission. If you were to read those specifications and everything else set to center, that engineer would have put it right on center. And that would be a legitimate argument, and that county needs to make a decision and say, you know what, this is close enough, and you know, when the guy puts his tape out there, I mean, that's it, and then go back and look at their wording and say, you know, we need to go back, and we've had one person, you know, that isn't gonna ruin the health of the entire.
To me, it would seem logical they should look at. The only thing they really need to look at is where this other neighbor's septic system is and where their well is.
Yep. And that's it.
Well, and I think that is one thing we've tried to address throughout is common sense approach on things and to be a little bit flexible. But, you know, we don't make the final decision. The city council does.
It sounds to me like, you know County Environmental Health has not enough to do nowadays. When you really look at what's going on now in government, is there's a lot of people that all of a sudden the workload is drastically reduced. There's not a lot for them to do. And if you prolong something a week or two, that keeps their job.
Oh, I hate thinking that. You know, and to keep people fresh and keep them from getting sour takes a lot of leadership.
Yeah.
And you just can't let people who have huge authority out in the field not realize who pays the bill.
Yep.
And that comes from policy.
Policy. Yeah.
Yep.
Exactly.
Okay, people, I think we've nagged it. We're good.
Okay, that's the only item we have. Does anybody else have anything? Under other matters, do you have anything?
Next time we see you will be on the 17th.
17th of November. That'll be our next
date. We see you on the 16th for another matter.
Right.
Yeah.
And so I would entertain a motion that we adjourn this meeting.
Also move.
Moved.
No.
And second, it is unanimous.